All right, good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. Go ahead and call to order the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Thank you for being here this morning. We have four bills that are scheduled for public hearing and possible work session, plus a work session bill. Just for everyone who's here and also for the people that are listening or at this point, Senator Thatcher will not be with us today due to a family issue that's come up over the weekend. And so if we take votes, she'll be registered as an excuse on each of the votes. What I'm going to try to do, I have House Bill 2644. I have a member who wants to testify from the House. He's currently chairing a committee because that's why we started late, because I went over there to testify in front of two of my bills in his committee. And so I'm going to hold that one back and see if he gets here so I can have Representative Witt make some introductions. But with that said, I'm going to go ahead and start with the other bills, and we'll go ahead and start from the bottom up. House Bill 3371A.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, House Bill 3371A specifies that students may not be suspended, expelled, disenrolled, denied academic or educational opportunities, harassed, threatened, or have transcripts withheld for making good faith reports of possible violations of state or federal law, including rules or regulations. The measure creates a private right of action and allows the State Board of Education or the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to impose sanctions against schools who violate the measure. There are no amendments today. There is an indeterminate fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
All right. Thank you. Matt, you're here. Robert, you're here. So why don't you go ahead and whoever's going to start off.
I'll kick us off. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Robert Unger. I'm here on behalf of Representative Peter Buckley. We just wanted to talk about HB 3371. This bill provide much-needed protections for Oregon students who make good-faith reports of violations of state and federal law. It simply extends a private right of action to students who are retaliated against by educational institutions. And we really feel that it's critical since students that they actually have an access to remedy against these retaliations, and particularly at a time when they're the most vulnerable in their lives. Matt here will talk in a minute about maybe a few instances where students have reported career colleges' mishandling of financial funds and were retaliated against. And I just wanted to reiterate that it's important to make sure that these protections are covered under discrimination laws, because at the moment they are not. And we really feel like HB 3371 will not impose a burden on the vast majority of educational institutions who abide by the law, but it will provide critical protections for student whistleblowers. And I just wanted to note that the amendment in the House was just to remove the requirement for the HEC to develop rules prohibiting retaliation against students, so sort of simplify it down to just the private right. And so with that, I'll let Matt go next.
Thank you. Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Matt Malmsheimer. I'm a partner at the law firm Haglin Kelly. By way of background, I practice predominantly in employment and labor law, and so have a very good deal of familiarity with the anti-retaliation laws and anti-discrimination laws on the books. The main reason I came to testify today is as a concerned citizen, basically to put a human face on why there's a need for this legislation. Currently, I'm representing a young woman who was in a professional program, discovered with some of her co-students what she believed to be illegal handling of financial aid funds. They were getting their living disbursements later than anticipated. She reported it to the Oregon Attorney General and with some other students drafted a letter, went about seeking support from other students who she believed were experiencing the same thing. When that came to light at the administration of the professional school, they initially suspended her and then expelled her about 6 months short of her completion of her program. Not only that, but the expulsion made her ineligible for further financial aid funds. It accelerated a note to the tune of approximately $4,500 that she's now in debt to, and really has no way of paying that off at this point. So she's stuck without the degree she was seeking. She's now got a, for her, crushing debt hanging over her head. And luckily, in this instance, she also happened to be a student intern at an on-campus facility. And as a result of the legislation that was passed in the 2013 session that extended employment law protections to student interns, she has thankfully got an avenue to correct that situation. But in this sort of narrow area of strictly speaking students, I was unable to find any sort of avenue to correct this situation, and I looked. So I don't believe, as Mr. Unger stated, that it would be used often. I think the vast majority of institutions are operating lawfully, and if there's a question about that, they're not going to jump on the retaliation. They'll say, whoa, okay, understand that you have a question about this, but let's what's really going on and explain that rather than taking this kind of action. So that's basically the substance of my prepared comments. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right, questions? It looks like you did a very good job for a Tuesday after a three-day weekend. So there's no questions. Let me ask if there's anyone else who wants to give testimony today on 3371A. Not seeing anyone. I'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 3371A, and I'm going ahead and open a work session on House Bill 3371A.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3371A to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3371A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Questions? Comments? Any objections? So order. And Senator Gelser, will you be our carrier for 3371? And we'll close that work session, and we're going to go ahead and open up a public hearing. We'll go ahead and go back to the top, House Bill 2354A.
Chair Prasansky, members of the committee, House Bill 2354A is your drone bill. In 2013, the Oregon legislature enacted House Bill 2710, which provided guidance and restrictions on the use of drones within Oregon. One part of 2710 created a civil right of action for property owners or landowners who do not want drones operating over their property. The operator must have flown the drone at an elevation of less than 400 feet and on at least one other occasion, and the landowner had the opportunity to tell them to stop. Once those parameters are met, they could bring an action to recover treble damages and attorney fees. House Bill 2354A removes the 400-foot restriction, thereby allowing an action to be commenced regardless of the height at which a drone is flown over the property. In addition, the measure changes the term drone to unmanned aircraft system to be consistent with the federal law. There are proposed A4 amendments also. This bill is ready to go as is and needs to wait on the A4s for paperwork.
All right. So let's see here. We have Brian. There you are. Brian Daugherty, come on up. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on House Bill 2354A? Brian, looks like you're it.
Good morning, Senator Prozanski, members of the committee. I'm Brian Daugherty with the Miller, Nash, Graham, and Dunn firm, testifying today on behalf of Amazon. And we have a dash A4 amendment, but I would just like to confirm to you, there is a work group that's been working on this. I came in late to this work group and offered an amendment, which is in the dash A4, which would say that the private right of action would not apply to a commercial operation that has been licensed by the FAA. What has happened since February, President Obama issued a memorandum directing the National Telecommunications and Information Administration to start a work process that is covering privacy, transparency, and accountability in the use of unmanned aerial systems. And May 21st, just last Thursday, the FAA granted Oregon, along with six other test sites, the ability to use unmanned aerial systems in research and development with conditions. And in all these, there is significant conditions the FAA is putting on while they're looking at the use of unmanned aerial systems. Some of the uses are for search and rescue, some are for agricultural purposes, other commercial uses. And the dash A4 would be something would say that once the FAA has figured this out and has gone through it to determine what are the conditions of use for commercial operation, that this private right of action, which would chill commercial use, could not be used. I appreciate that we are a bit late to the party, and we're a bit early, but it is a jurisdictional issue with the FAA, and I think that the protections that an FAA authorization or license would make the dash A4 is appropriate. I'd be glad to answer any questions. I support the underlying bill and its purposes, and would ask you to consider that, and I'd be happy to provide any further information. I sent a bunch of material last Thursday outlining President Obama's memorandum, outlining Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley's support request and the support for the FAA's grant of this for our manufacturers in the Oregon test site. Thank you very much for listening to me today.
All right, thank you. Questions? Senator Burdick.
What types of people can get licenses from the FAA? Obviously Amazon, commercial enterprises, but what other classes of people can get licenses?
Senator Prozanski, Senator Burdick, to be clear, there is no license for commercial unarmed, unmanned aerial system use today. An example is just last week, a mining operation got a FAA condition of authorization with 31 conditions attached that they could use this to fly over their mining, this open mining area, for purposes of environmental and safety issues. And they have strong conditions. So there are exemptions that are granted on a case-by-case basis. While the NTIA is looking at privacy, transparency, and accountability in determining rules for more commercial and private use. So it's looking at both commercial and private. But they're very strict conditions. One is under 200 feet. Can't fly on that. They have weight restrictions on the vehicles. They have speed issues. They want to have what's being developed now is software to make it aerial highways that would avoid as much as possible certain installations, areas, properties. And that's going into this whole operation, but that there is a lot going on right now to determine how to use that.
Chair, a very weird question just popped into my mind. What are the consequences if a property owner just kind of shoots one out of the air over their property?
I've always wondered what happened when their dog bites it. My dog ate the drone, but I don't.
Trap shooting, I would think.
I think there's some people that feel that way about some of this usage. I can't answer that. Maybe someone else has addressed that. I'm not sure what the law is.
Let's just say it's not good.
It's not.
There's federal intervention that would occur.
I defer to the chair.
If caught.
If you miss, you're in trouble because they got you on an 8x5 photo. All right, any other questions? All right, Brian, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. I'm going to tell you at this point I am not real inclined to move the A4s because of how the processes work. We had a group that met. I think this is something that we can bring up, and I think the work group needs to be part of that, and that we can actually see as we materialize over this next year, and if we need to go ahead and take that type of step, that we can do so in February. I appreciate and support, your support for the underlying bill. I also understand for your client attempting to make this change. But knowing where we're at in this session, I just think it's best to go ahead and move what the work group has moved forward and that we regroup and see what are the changes. Because I expect that this is going to be an ongoing process for us through this, let's say, new adventure in use of unmanned aircraft systems. So I got to get away from using the word drone. And so with that, hopefully your client will respect the decision that's being made today so we can move forward and we'll see as we go forward. I guess at this point, knowing the state of where we're at, that this law is going to really be impacting a lot of people in the sense of having a private right of action that would be engaged in, let's say, any type of litigation over the next year or so. I just think we're just on the cutting edge. As you said, we're kind of at the beginning of this, and I just think that we need to have the work group fully vet that. I don't know if they did or didn't, but knowing where we're at today, I feel more comfortable just moving forward. Hopefully that will be understandable to your client.
Mr. Chair, thank you. We'll work closely with that work group. I believe it'll be continuing in the interim, and we will work closely with them.
Yeah, they have, and they will. Absolutely.
Thank you very much for hearing my testimony.
You bet. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 26, excuse me, House Bill 2354A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2354A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2354A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair will carry 2354A. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2354A. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 2361A.
Chair Przonski, members of the committee, House Bill 2361A is for Disability Rights Oregon and says that courts cannot charge the long-term care ombudsman or Disability Rights Oregon a fee for filing a motion or objection to a petition in a protective proceeding. Under current law, the court may not charge the respondent or the protected person a fee for filing that objection. This would extend that prohibition on fees to long-term care ombudsman and Disability Rights Oregon. There is no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no amendments today.
All right. So we have today, we have Bob Jundep, excuse me. And is there anyone else who want to testify on House Bill 2361A? Besides Bob?
Chair Przonski, members of the committee, my name is Bob Jundef from Disability Rights Oregon. Years ago, back in the 1990s, there were many efforts by advocates to look at our guardianship process and to try to make it a fairer process, because as the committee knows, guardianship is a civil law process that allows a court to appoint a person to make decisions, important life decisions for someone who's incapacitated. Our Oregon system does not provide funds for the appointment of attorneys to represent folks who are subject to guardianship, who are indigent. Nor does it have a mandatory hearing requirement, as do every other state in the country. So the idea was that perhaps we could implement these provisions. There's actually bills before you in this session on the same topic. So this is something, a place where Oregon has never gone. But in 1999, there was a suggestion created that, well, perhaps there is an inexpensive way to provide some oversight or better protection for people in the system. And the idea was that for people who are subject to guardianship, for whom the guardian is proposing to place the person in a institution or facility, that there might be an additional protection for them. The Long-Term Care Ombudsman and Disability Rights Oregon at that time essentially volunteered to play a role in this process. And what it would require is that when a person petitions to be a guardian or an existing guardian wishes to place a person in an institution, they would file a notice to all the interested parties, including Disability Rights Oregon and the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, if the person was proposed to be placed in an institution. And the idea was that our organizations could then contact the individual, ask them if they were concerned about this, if they understood what the process was, and they had any objections or a desire to be heard on the topic. And if that was the case, that we would try to facilitate that happening. So we've done this for 16 years. Generally speaking, about I would say 3 to 5 times a year, we learn that the individual does have a concern, does want to be heard, and we send that information on to the court. The way our system is designed is that a court can appoint an attorney to represent an individual, but there's no money to do so, so the court has to look for volunteer attorneys who are willing to play that role. From time to time, our organization will do that, but of course, this is a statewide function, and it's difficult for us to have the resources or ability to get out and around to represent everyone for free. But we do take this role seriously. In recent couple of years, we've had a couple of jurisdictions now who have demanded that we file a filing fee if we're going to try to provide information to the court or take on the role of representation, we've become concerned about primarily because since we're not paid to do this work and we're doing it voluntarily, to then be charged to perform the role seemed to be difficult for us. And so that's why the bill is before you today, to in those limited situations in which we do step forward to assist a person, that we can do so without being charged a filing fee.
All right, thank you. Questions? Any comments? Bob, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2361A. Open a work session on House Bill 2361A.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2361A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2361A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. I'm going to let Senator Cruz carry this one, if that's all right.
I don't know about that, Mr. Chair.
It's a little dicey, but
Sketch here.
All right, so we'll close the work session on 2361A. I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2349A.
The committee, you heard House Bill 2349A on May 12th. This deals with professional fiduciaries and what they must disclose to the court in their petition for appointment and in their annual report to the court. The measure also ties the professional fiduciaries' actions to the Uniform Prudent Investor Act. There are no amendments. There is no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. This bill is ready to move today.
Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2349A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2349A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And Senator Burdick, I'm going to ask you to please be our carrier on 2349A.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I just get all the exciting ones.
I know that. We'll close the work session on that exciting bill. And
it is tied up in committee.
He is? Okay. We've held off as long as we could to make sure we gave Whit an opportunity to be here to lead off. He is apparently tied up in committee from what we've heard, so I'm not sure if he's going to be able to make it. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and open up the public hearing on House Bill 2644.
Chair Prasansky, members of the committee, House Bill 2644 allows claim for wrongful death against the state in a very narrow set of circumstances. In order to bring this claim, it's only allowable against the state and not against local public bodies. The death must have occurred in the scope and course of a person's employment. It must have occurred as a result of the conduct of another person who is subsequently convicted of murder or found guilty except for insanity of murder, and the person was not employed by a public body at the time of the death. The measure would only apply to claims based on crimes committed on or after May 1st, 2012, and is repealed on January 2nd, 2017. If the measure revives the claim, the claimant must bring the action within one year of the effective date. It also declares an emergency. There is an indeterminate fiscal impact and no revenue impact, no amendments today.
All right. I have Mike Shanahan.
Sagan.
Mike, why don't you come up? Is there anyone else who's going to want to testify on 2644 besides Mike?
Good morning, Chair Prasansky and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I've had the pleasure and the appreciation of meeting with all of you, except for, I believe, Senator Cruz. I missed out on seeing him for our scheduling matter. So you've all kind of had a chance to meet with me about this already, but to refresh your memory, 1 week ago would be the third anniversary of the death of Ms. Warren. And as you may recall, she was murdered by a gentleman who had been placed in the Columbia County community. Ms. Warren was employed by a private nonprofit to deliver the meds to this gentleman, and when she did not return to her employment, she was found stabbed to death in his bathtub. At the time when I received this case, oh, by the way, I should introduce myself for me. I'm Mike Sahagian. I am an attorney in Beaverton, Oregon. That might make sense why I'm sitting here today. When the family came and talked to me about this, my initial reaction was, you know, much like any worker who's killed on a job or, for that matter, injured, you can bring a claim against a third party. It has nothing to do with workers' comp. And by the way, MLAC has already signed off on this long ago. You can bring a third party claim. However, there's a loophole in the law, and that's the statute that we're trying to correct, where if the third party is a state entity or their employee, they get the same protection as if they were the employer. And when I first saw this, I found it hard to believe, and I talked to an attorney who actually tried a case like this about 10-plus years ago, and a circuit court judge had ruled that that statute was unconstitutional, allowed the trial to go forward, got a jury verdict, and it went up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, no, this statute is constitutional. And I asked the attorney, what do we do about this? And he laughingly said, change the law. And that was 3 years ago, and so here I am trying to change the law. This bill has been worked over and fine-tuned. We had a work session after the first time we tried to go through this, and a lot of folks have participated. It's been boiled down to this point where it would have to be a person who is murdered on the job. It would have to be brought against a state entity only. It is the kind of bill that isn't going to come up very often, but when it comes up, this is justice, I think, demands this, and I think the proof in that is the House had 57 yes votes on this bill. And Representative Witt was going to be here today early, I believe, because in Columbia County, where this incident took place, this is probably one of the biggest issues up there. We didn't quite make it out of the last session, and it was front page news in the local paper in St. Helens. It was the editorial that this bill must be passed. It's a big deal up there, and I think it's a big deal around the state. It won't happen very often. One of the concerns was a fiscal issue. The research has been done, as indicated. This is not going to happen very often, but when it does, justice demands that something be done, and here we are trying to do it. I've passed out to you a reminder of put a face on this thing. This is the mother of this lady who was murdered that you see there, and has a little more information about what went on. With that in mind, I'll take any questions if there are any. Thank you.
All right, questions? Any comments? Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator, for all the time you've given this bill. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right, so we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2644. I just want to acknowledge that Representative Witt was apparently here at 8 o'clock this morning when we had originally scheduled. Our paths did not cross as they should have because I had two bills in his committee that started at 8 o'clock. So apparently while he was up here when we had already changed ours to 8:30 yesterday and reposted, he didn't get the memo. So I do want to put on the record that I do know that Representative Witt is a supporter of the bill. But because of his commitments and his obligations in his committee that he's chairing right now, was not able to actually put any testimony on the record. So with that, we'll close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 2644.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2644 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2644 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend that Senator Johnson carry it. She's the chief sponsor.
And any other comments? With that, passes. Senator Johnson has asked me to carry the bill, so the chair will carry the bill. Okay. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2644. And
be respectful of members.
We went through all of that.
Okay.
And she chose me. So you got our choice.
Okay.
All right, with that, I think that concludes. Tomorrow, we are set to start at 8. So the next 2 days, I believe, we're scheduled for 8 o'clock, and we're working on whether or not we need to do anything so extreme as starting 30 minutes early next week or not. We think we have it under control. So with that, we're adjourned until tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
So how many bills do you have?
8 o'clock.